The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we are in October, and I want to welcome you back for Political Breakfast. Always good to have you here, a product of WABE Atlanta. I'm Lisa Ram, our political strategist, Democratic strategist Theron Johnson, and Republican strategist Brian Robinson are both here today. Good to see you, and more importantly, great to hear both of you.
Thanks, Lisa. Good to be with you.
Good to be here, Lisa.
Well, you know, it's been quite a week again. There's infighting within the Cobb County Republican Party, we hear. This pro-Trump faction slowly coming to life again, and so many other things happening as a result. The Cobb GOP's county committee passing a resolution last week censoring Governor Kemp, you know, for failing to do something with, I believe, a crackdown on illegal immigration. So they're really picking on him in a sense, you know, in wake of this President Trump fallout. And you just kind of sit back and wonder, when is this all of this going to end, right?
I think the purpose of the party is to support our Republican incumbents and to get Republican challengers elected. And that is what the party needs to be focused on right now. I mean, this is a 50-50 state. Republicans have to be unified. And instead, we're having a circular firing squad. And you know, I've said on the show many times, Democrats have proven they can win statewide with good candidates. And if Republicans aren't unified, and that's what happened in the runoff in 2020, and the state party or county parties, they got to come to the table and stop all this garbage for now. We are in cycle, and they got to focus on getting Republicans elected.
It's just interesting. You know, a lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon. You had the Cobb Young Republicans, you know, getting in on this, and former Cobb GOP chair Jason Shepherd stepping down. So it seems like it's mounting to be a mess. Theron, what are your thoughts there?
Lisa, let's bring this into context. You know, I've been working in politics in Georgia now for 20 years. My first big win was in Cobb County in 2002. And that's when I ran a campaign for a young woman named Alicia Thomas. She became the first African-American elected to the state legislature from Cobb County, and she also was the youngest. But the reason I bring that up, Lisa, is because back then, and even leading up to 2002, and even in recent presidential elections, Cobb County was the Republican stronghold. It was where the most registered voting Republicans were in the state of Georgia. So fast forward to now, the party is basically trying to censure their Republican governor, and people are resigning because of Donald Trump. I believe you're going to see more counties follow suit. And this is a problem not only for Governor Kemp, but any Republican, he or she, that is going to be in the ballot in 2022.
Well, sure. And that's why Republicans have got to be united, and they got to move past this, and they got to do it fairly quickly. And I think part of what could do that, what's going to change this narrative, is when Republicans begin to zero in on who the Democratic nominees are. And then all of a sudden, they're going to be able to post up on those Democrats, you know, led by the most famous non-elected Democrat in the whole world, Stacey Abrams. If she's the Democratic nominee for governor, she will be a unifying factor for Republicans. But, you know, we're not in a good place right now out there, and that's absolutely the truth. And, you know, one thing that gives me hope for Republicans going into next year, despite this division, is it's a midterm with a Democrat in the White House who's right now polling really bad with independents. You've got a still strong organic Republican vote in the state. And we're going to have some polarizing Democrats on the other side of the ballot. But for right now, we're not in a good spot. I totally agree.
But Brian, really quickly, if you can, you're really good at spending. That's why you get paid the big bucks. But you got to answer the fundamental question. And I'm agreeing with you that you definitely will be able to utilize whether it's Stacey Abrams or any Democrat, he or she who decides to run for governor. Yes, you will be able to fire up your party by telling them all the things that are wrong with President Biden. I do think President Biden is doing a good job. And I think ultimately in 2022, his numbers will be high. But Brian, you got to answer the fundamental question, bro. What are you going to do about former President Donald Trump? That's your problem. It's not Stacey Abrams. It's not Joe Biden. It's Trump. What are you going to do about him? Because he is the person that is the architect of all this division that we're talking about right now within the Republican Party.
For any Republican candidate, taking on Trump really isn't on the table. Because if you do that, you're going to contribute to what I'm saying we can't do, which is divide the party. And so those who are on the receiving end of it right now have just got to stay focused. And you say Brian Kemp over and over and over again, take the punches. We saw numerous punches level during
still
the Perry rally
for sure.
2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And what does he do? Does he fight back? No. He stays on his message. He tells his story. And that's really the only strategy that's out there. Is it ideal? No. But you're seeing a lot of message discipline out of the Kemp administration.
This might be the perfect opportunity to bring in our special guest today, Attorney General Chris Carr. Attorney General, thank you so much for joining us today. It is a pleasure to have you.
Hey, Lisa, it's great to be on. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, look, your timing is perfect. You know, what about all this infighting within the Cobb County Republican Party? How do you feel about this? And what does this say about the future of the party as we're going into a very critical election year?
Well, and Theron, it's great to join you and great to join Brian as well. And appreciate y'all having me on. You know, I worked for two of, I think, Georgia's greatest Republican elected officials, and that's Johnny Isaacson and Nathan Deal. And I watched those two guys get up every day, roll up their sleeves and do the job. And they were two of the most successful politicians who I say didn't like the politics of politics, but they just did their job. They did it well. And again, I think Georgia saw some of its greatest success when those two were in office. Those are two. And I had an event the end of June where both of those gentlemen were honorary hosts of the event, but also with Saxby Chambliss. Those are the people that I emulate, because I do think that those three elected officials did it the right way for the right reasons. I also subscribe, it's kind of what Brian was saying, you can choose which direction you're going to go in. I choose to be a unifier. I choose to follow that Reagan's 11th commandment that thou shalt not attack other Republicans, because look what happens when you do. It hurts the party. It hurts your candidates. Now, clearly, I've got a self-interest because I'm going to be on the ballot as well. So that's maybe what it sounds like. But it's also a principle that I think is true.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but whose job is it at this point to stand up and say, listen, this has got to stop. We've got to move forward in a more unified fashion. We just have to. Who is that person?
I think everybody has their I can only control myself. I know every other candidate can only control themselves. And I've said it before. I said, look, I will stand up. I will fight to unify the party. I will talk about the things that we've done as Attorney General, what we believe in. And I think, again, this state has had two decades of incredible growth under conservative Republican leadership. And I'm very proud to be a part of that for the past 5 years. I'm proud of the role I play as Attorney General, which is to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the constitutional laws of the state of Georgia and represent the interests of the people of our state. But as Johnny Isaacson used to say, look, politics is the ultimate team sport. And, you know, you got to acknowledge that. And we need to acknowledge it as a party. And I'm going to be a part of doing just that.
Well, Mr. Attorney General, this is Theron. Thank you so much for being on with us today. And last time we saw each other, we was having a dinner at an undisclosed restaurant in the city of Atlanta, in Buckhead, actually. We made it out of there safely, bro. So it's good to know that
You didn't get mugged? Well.
No, believe it or not, Lisa, the Attorney General and I, he was with some folks that are very important to the state. I was with a gentleman who was very important to the state, and we actually in the spirit of bipartisanship, stood up in the middle of a restaurant, had a conversation, Lisa, and next morning I get a text from my good friend Brian Robinson saying, "Hey, I heard you at the restaurant last night." So, you know, it was good. But hey, so I have a lot of questions to ask, but just to piggyback on something you said, Attorney General Carr, and Brian can tell you, I actually complimented you on the show. Tell our listeners, you know, when you have actually stood up to President Trump. You know, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I don't want to paraphrase, but I know there's been some times that I'm sure you're proud of where you've actually pushed back on former President Trump and something that he may influenced you or tried to influence you to do, and you stood up for what you thought was right.
Well, I'm going to answer it this way, Theron. As everybody knows, we had a historic election, challenges to our election from November the 3rd to January the 6th. My wife, Joan, was actually chief of staff to Senator Loeffler, who was part of the runoff. Senator Perdue was in the runoff. You know, I always tell everybody that back in 1992, when Al Gore came to the University of Georgia campaigning for he and Bill Clinton, the Tate Center was packed with Democratic supporters, except for six folks that were kind of in the middle holding up George Bush signs, and I was one of them. So my support for the Republican Party goes way back. Having worked for a United States senator, having been a part of this party, we had an interesting and challenging time in our state, though, between November the 3rd and January the 6th. And we went to court 16 times based on the facts and the evidence to stand up for, as I said before, the Constitution of the United States, the constitutional laws of the state of Georgia. My job is to look at the facts and the evidence, and that's what we did. And we went to court before federal judges and state court judges, between Obama appointees and Trump appointees and everybody in between, and we did what our job was to do, which is to defend the law of our state. And of those 16 times, we prevailed 16 times. Politically, did I want our senators and our Republican president to win? Absolutely. I campaigned for all of them. But my job was to uphold the law based on the facts and the evidence, and that's exactly what I did. But again, do I want my team to win, the Republicans? Absolutely. And I'm going to do everything I can in 22. Because in my opinion, as Brian mentioned before, as you've mentioned, the state has narrowed. Isaacson got elected with 59% of the vote in 04. And I got about 1.4% of the vote in 18. So the state's narrowed. Too much to lose in 22 if we don't, you know, get back together and rally the troops.
With that said, President Trump continues to be a distraction. Some people call him a distraction. Let me say that. What's your pleasure at this point? That he just stay out of Georgia politics?
I'm just going to focus on what I'm doing. Plain and simple. That's all I can control. And again, having worked for senators and governors, you know, when you're down ballot, you know, you really got to rely on strong Senate candidates and strong gubernatorial candidates. I saw it with Isaacson and I saw it with Deal. Now, do I think that we can do some things to really, you know, put some points on the board, what we've done on human trafficking and violent crime and gang activity and elder abuse? Absolutely, because I think those issues really do appeal to a group that was critically important in 2020, and that's college-educated men and women in the suburbs, not just of Atlanta, but around the country. And I think that's where Republicans really had a hard time. I think we can do a lot with that, but I got to be focused on me. I can't control anybody else's campaign, and that's something that Isaacson really taught me.
Oh, Theron Love, just talk about those college-educated women in the Atlanta suburbs. But that's, I mean, hardly a week goes by. But
yeah, those are my right ladies. I like them. They both the right way.
So one thing that's been a huge topic on the show this year, Attorney General, is the election law reform that was passed back in the winter. That has been sued now. The state's been sued by the Department of Justice and the Biden administration. You are the lawyer who's fighting it as Attorney General for the state. Where does that stand now? And I know you can't say a lot about the case because you're prosecuting it or defending it, but, you know, what do you think is going to happen in this case?
Yeah, that's right, Brian. And we've got about 8 or 9 private lawsuits that have been filed by different groups. And then we've got the lawsuit that the Department of Justice filed. I've said this before, I'll say it again. When you actually look at what the bill does, it provides more security, more transparency, more access to elections. That helps Republicans and Democrats. It helps anybody that's doing it the right way. It's a strengthening thing for our state, not something that takes anything away. I believe we're going to prevail. I truly do, and we're going to defend it and stand up, for the law that was passed. Because again, I just think that when you look at what is needed, what benefits Republicans and Democrats and independents and Georgia citizens, it's to know that their one vote is protected. That's how we govern ourselves. We each get one vote. That should matter. Having access to the polls matters. Having transparency in elections matters. So I think when you look at what SB 202 does, when you actually read the language, people have started now, I've seen, in the media and online and that sort of thing, taken to say it, oh, if you actually read the bill, and it's kind of a punchline now, but it's the truth. Look at what the law that was passed by the legislature, and I think it makes our state a better place.
One leader who is strongly against that is Stacey Abrams, and you were quoted as saying that every time she goes on a late night talk show, she further divides the country, and people believe every word that she says and accepts everything she says about Senate Bill 202. Has time healed that thought for you, or do you still feel the same way?
No, I do. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, Stacey has kind of put herself in the position where there's a lot of folks around the country on the left that really take what she says as the gospel truth. And I'll go back. Fair Fight has sued the state many times, all in part over an allegation of voter suppression. And an Obama-appointed judge, and I don't want to talk too much about it because it is continuing, but there's a lawsuit that was filed. Steve Jones, who was appointed by President Obama, has that case. And in May, I believe it was, he dismissed 18 of the 20 claims that Fair Fight had about voter suppression in the state of Georgia. So again, I go back to SB 202. Let's not forget, and I mean, and Theron and Brian, I think you both have talked about this, but in 2018, there were allegations of wrongdoing in our elections, whether it had to do what boards were doing or weren't doing, and machines and this, that, and the other thing, that were complaints made by Democrats. In 2020, there were complaints made by Republicans. It switched to be voter fraud rather than voter suppression. But again, at the end of the day, what we did are things in part that both parties at some time may or may not have complained about. So again, you can always do things better, and I think that's what we've done in the state.
So if what you're saying is true, is that there was definitely some claims that were made in 2018 of voter irregularities and voter suppression, why didn't Republicans come back to the legislature in 2020 and or in 2019, and say, hey, we've been brought to our attention, we had a very divisive race, parties got involved. There are a lot of claims that were made, but we want to make sure we fix some of these complaints in 2019. So when we come up to the 2020 elections, we can make sure that these are addressed. Where I'm going with this question is simple. Do you believe that Republicans changed the rules of how we administer elections in the state of Georgia by removing the person, Brad Raffensperger, who's constitutionally elected by the people of Georgia, to basically create a better voting process that will benefit them and not Democrats?
No, I don't. I think what the legislature did is to create more security by requiring an ID, which again, I've never understood why you should have an ID to vote in person, but you can't vote. You shouldn't have an ID to vote by mail. Either one is your one vote. So I think that creates more security. I think there are always have been challenges with the signature match. Now you got a unique identifier. So I think there's more security. I think there's more access and there's more transparency for everybody. And I think that it's across the board, it's going to benefit the state of Georgia.
You know, my thing about the pushback on the voter law is the opponents of it have had to constantly move the goalpost on what's offensive. First it was voter ID, but then Joe Biden and Stacey Abrams and others, Raphael Warnock, said voter ID is fine. And so what's Jim Crow 2.0 now? Is it that you can't hand out water within 150 feet of the, is that Jim Crow? Are we really going to make that comparison? I mean, that seems really silly. So we've had to move the goalpost. And I think what Theron is getting at, and in Theron's defense, this has become the Democratic talking point. Once the substance of the argument crumbled, it became questioning the intent and questioning the timing of it in the wake of the 2020 elections, which is fine. I mean, people can question Republicans. I'm okay with that debate. I just want people to look at the substance, which is what Chris is saying here, that Democratic turnout, minority turnout in 2022 will be higher than it was in 2020. That is my promise to Georgians. And that is what the proof in the pudding is.
Yeah, but the quick caveat to that, Brian, is I'm not going to let you and other Republicans take credit for that. Now, both of you have a former boss who deserves a lot of that credit, and that is former Governor Nathan Deal, who basically put in the law that says that when a person gets their driver's license, they can automatically register to vote. That's part of the reason why you're going to see an uptick in a minority voting in the state of Georgia. But the other reason, Brian, is because, and Republicans are not doing this because you guys are always taking credit for, you know, being the number one state to do business, but it's going to be higher numerically because you're going to have more African-Americans and minorities and Asians and Hispanics who have moved to the state of Georgia and have become registered to vote. Republicans can't take credit for that. So when you tell people that you're going to see the highest turnout in the minority community we've ever seen before, yeah, because of demographic shifts, not because of what Republicans have done and is trying to do with Senate Bill 202.
But I think even the percentage therein will be higher. I think not looking at raw numbers, looking at the percentage of people who live here, you're going to see a huge Democratic turnout in 2022.
But I don't see, and I may be wrong. Again, I saw the Attorney General in Buckhead at a restaurant. And, you know, I'm not the one to say I hang out in all the hot spots in Republican places in the state of Georgia. But show me a massive voter registration effort in Georgia right now that a Republican, he or she, elected or non-elected, is doing right now. I just don't see it.
I love this question because we don't need a voter registration drive because everybody is registered already because of Republican law changes that automatically register. The AJC had a piece recently about how almost everybody who is eligible to vote is registered to vote. So the idea, and look, both sides perpetrate this falsehood.
So you're actually making my point. So you can't, as a Republican, take credit for more minorities being registered to vote in voting, because we know that 9 out of 10 of them are going to vote for the Democrat. So that you're actually making my point. So stop trying to take credit for demographic shifts and efforts of other organizations that are registering people of color that you guys are not doing, that is actually educating them and mobilizing them to go and vote. So you're actually making my point that you guys are trying to take credit for something that you're not putting the resources nor your efforts to try to increase the minority registration and the minority turnout in voting in the state.
I don't think that's really my point. My point is that the new law won't suppress votes. It just won't suppress votes. And I think, and judge me by the empirical evidence of 2022. We'll know yes or no if it suppresses votes next year.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Our guest is Attorney General Chris Carr. We hope you stick with us because so much more to talk to you about human trafficking and the Ahmaud Arbery case as well. So we will be right back after this short break.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to Political Breakfast. Our special guest today, Attorney General Chris Carr. We left it off with Brian making some pertinent remarks there. Brian, you want to pick up or did you finish your thought?
If there's any law, and I think this is true for the Attorney General, I'm not speaking for him here, but if there was a law that kept eligible voters from voting, I would be against it, and I think the Attorney General would be against it. I'm sure he is. He's nodding his head here because he's with me.
And I let's hear from him. What does he have to say? Yeah, let's hear from our Attorney General, Chris Carr.
Absolutely, I would oppose anything that prohibited an eligible voter from voting. And again, I think look at 2018. Stacey Abrams got more votes for governor than any gubernatorial candidate in Georgia history, except for one person named Brian Kemp. I mean, absolutely. Again, it would be preposterous to suggest that you know anybody of goodwill, starting with myself, would favor prohibiting an eligible voter from voting.
But Mr. Attorney General, let me ask you some two quick questions that are very specific. All right, and last time I checked, we're still dealing with a deadly pandemic, right? People in the state of Georgia are still dying from COVID-19. People are still contracting this deadly disease. We don't have any sort of evidence that we may not be in this same situation in 2022, right? Because while the numbers are getting better, we're still living this new norm. Mr. Attorney General, why not re-implement what you guys did during the pandemic and don't reduce the amount of drop boxes? It worked for Democrats and Republicans, but more importantly, it worked for people in our disabled community. So that's the first question. Until we come out of this pandemic, are you willing to even look at maybe making sure that in November, we're less than 30 days away from a municipal election? And because of Senate Bill 202, you've taken away the amount of drop boxes or people utilized during this deadly pandemic. My second question is, do you support the Secretary of State being removed from his constitutional duties to administer the election? With Senate Bill 202, you all strip his powers away to administer an election. He has the ability not to be on the state board to determine if there are any irregularities or are there any things that happen in any county, not just in Democratic counties. Why take him away from that? Why not restore his ability to administer the election that the people of Georgia elected him to do?
Yeah, two things. I think, Theron, I think you know this as well. My constitutional duty is simply to be the lawyer for the executive branch of state government. So whatever laws are passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, it's my duty to uphold. So if I want to affect the change in the law, then I should run for the legislature. That's how we change laws in the state. You go to the legislative branch. My job is to enforce the laws of the state. So that's the constitutional role of the Attorney General. Constitutional role of the Secretary of State is to administer elections from the state perspective. The second thing I'll say, though, is it's not factually accurate to say we've taken away drop boxes. Drop boxes were never provided for in law. They were provided for under an emergency order. So for the first time ever, drop boxes are required in each and every county. Even though they were utilized in only a couple of counties, and a couple of counties used them in a number of different places. But to say that we have reduced the number and taken away is, I would just argue, is factually inaccurate.
Well, the number was reduced. Is that not correct? So you just proved my point. Right now, on October 6th, we are still in a deadly pandemic, right? Is that not true? And many of the federal assistance that we're receiving from the federal government is because we are still in this posture. But is it not true that you guys reduced the amount of drop boxes from the drop boxes amount that you had during the emergency decision when we went through the state of the pandemic? So why not just leave the drop boxes the way they were? If there was no harm, there was no tremendous financial burden on the state of Georgia. And at a time, Mr. Attorney General, we're receiving millions and millions of dollars from this Democratic-controlled Senate, House, and executive branch. Why not reallocate some of that money towards restoring the drop boxes?
Theron, there's a number of different ways to vote. Why is the focus only on drop boxes? I mean, there are so many different ways to – I mean, you can vote early. You can vote absentee. You can vote on the day of. You can drop the ballot. So again, I don't know exactly how many drop boxes were used in Fulton or DeKalb or wherever it was, but I do know this. I now know as a result of SB 202, drop boxes are now required securely in each and every county in the state of Georgia. So that would be – and again – I wasn't in the legislature to determine what you did or what you didn't do, but my job is to uphold the law that was passed.
I want to turn, if we can, to the Ahmaud Arbery case, which, of course, made national news. And you played a critical role in the early stages of that, of making sure that it stayed on the radar. And once you and Governor Kemp, for that matter, heard about it, immediate action was taken. Can you talk a little bit about how that all came about, your relationship with Ahmaud Arbery's parents, and how that has played a role in how all this worked out? And then, obviously, you bird-dogging this to the point where the DA, the Republican DA down there, I might add, is now facing an indictment for not doing the job right.
Yeah, the Ahmaud Arbery case is certainly a case of national importance, but it's unfortunately was one that's in our backyard, so it's of incredible importance, I think, to Ahmaud's family, to the Brunswick community, and to our state. Let me start by saying kind of where the case is. There's three different tracks that are going on right now. There's the murder trial that will be taking place this month in Brunswick. The federal government has filed federal civil rights charges. The Department of Justice filed civil rights charges against the three individuals accused of murdering Ahmaud. And then what we did is we took on looking at the actions of the district attorneys and others from the moment Ahmaud was killed until the video came out in May of 2020. You know, one of the things I've said is, you know, there was a video that came out, and I actually got tagged on Facebook by a friend from the coast who said, "Hey, are you aware of this?" And once we were made aware, the governor's office, the GBI, within a matter of I think 12 or 18 hours, the district attorney that had the case had asked the GBI to come in, and within, I think it's 36 hours of being on the ground, arrests were made, which we're very, very proud of. But until total and complete justice is done, in my opinion, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. Yes, we recently indicted the district attorney from Brunswick, Jackie Johnson, but our investigation is continuing. So I don't want to go into too much more, but have spoken with Ahmaud's mother and father on several occasions, have met with the community, the Brunswick community, which deserves a tremendous amount of credit for coming together and making sure that this case stays on the forefront and people are working constructively to make sure that justice for Ahmaud occurs.
So, Mr. Attorney General, really quickly, you know, I have also applauded you about being very transparent with the public about where we stand in this case. And I know you've talked to the family, and I've talked to folks along the coast to say that you've done that. The question I have is that the original district attorney on this was District Attorney Johnson. And then it was moved because she had conflicts of interest, because the person who's on trial now actually used to work for her office. And then it went to District Attorney Barnhill. And then it went to another district attorney near Savannah. And then you appointed the district attorney from Cobb, the special prosecutor, which is where the case is still right now. My question is, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I believe I'm not. When the DA Barnhill was either recused or removed from the case, he made statements saying that there was nothing there. Like, basically, he did not see any evidence to bring charges. But isn't it true that it wasn't until the video surfaced where this person had to be replaced? And so my question is, and if I'm wrong on that, correct me. My question is, if you indicted Johnson, then are you going to indict Barnhill? Because to me, he is just as complicit in this process, not saying that he's guilty, but he's as complicit as DA Johnson, because he made public statements based on the evidence that was presented to him either by the video or before or after the video to show that it's clearly something, you know, that can be deemed by many as a hate crime.
So he recused himself before the video came out. And as I mentioned before, our investigation is ongoing. It's continuing, so I don't want to comment any further.
Okay, thank you.
Can you comment on any contact you've had with the family? The family in the very beginning felt that they were getting lost in all of this. Do you have direct contact with the family? And if so, what have those exchanges been like?
No, I have. And I don't want to get into the personal conversations, but I have had several conversations over the phone with both his mother and his father, have met with them in person in Brunswick and stay in contact with them and have since this process has begun.
Attorney General Chris Carr, again, we thank you so much for being here. And before we have to go, we want to talk about human trafficking. Human trafficking has been a big issue in Georgia and in the Atlanta area. And the Office of Human Trafficking is celebrating a win this week. And I'll let you expound on that, because a guilty verdict goes a long way, doesn't it, when it comes to human trafficking?
It sure does. And Lisa, I appreciate you bring it up. Yeah, so our office, we have the first of its kind human trafficking prosecutions unit, started in July of 2019. We got it fully funded around Labor Day. I say that because we just had gotten going when COVID hit. And in fact, we were supposed to have our first trial out of Cobb County in March of 2020, the week that everything shut down because of COVID. Then it got pushed to August the 2nd when the Delta variant spiked. So it got pushed again until a couple of weeks ago. Well, we're very proud that we got convicted two individuals on human trafficking. So the first two convictions that we've gotten, you'll hear more about sentencing, which will be on Friday. But we're very, very proud of that. And one of the things, I guess a couple of things. One is you got to be able to focus on the sellers as well as the buyers. Both have to be held accountable. And in this particular trial, again, you've had just such a difficult situation, and the average age of a human trafficking victim is a 12 to 14-year-old girl. And sometimes the victims even fight against, having justice be done.
Yeah, so
unfortunately, this is
the
kind of case. Yeah, they are. And it's just horrific. We had a situation here where we had a victim that was trying to, was not a helpful victim in this particular case. But we got to be able to stand up for those, to me, are true victims, and we've got to be able to stand up for them. So you're going to see more and more coming out of our office. Now that the courts are open, we've got about 20 different cases around the state that we're working, and it's a great partnership between federal, state, and local law enforcement, because it's such a mobile industry. Today you'll be in Atlanta, and tomorrow you'll be in Macon, and on Friday you're going to be in Valdosta. And this is why it makes sense for the state to have a human trafficking prosecutions unit, but you got to be able to work with local law enforcement and federal law enforcement as well.
And Lisa, can I ask one final question here? You know, one thing that's bothered me as I'm looking around the state, obviously, as Theron mentioned earlier in the show, crime is the number one issue, not only in Metro Atlanta, but everywhere in the state and around the country. And we're seeing a pattern of some of the new, more liberal DAs coming into office and picking and choosing what they want to prosecute. Is that something your office is taking note of? Does it impact your office? Is there anything you can do about it?
Yeah, we have. And it is troubling because, again, as I said, my job is to uphold the laws that are passed by the legislature and signed by the governor. And when you have one member of the executive branch or judicial branch, if you have a DA or an attorney general that just decides unilaterally, I'm not going to enforce certain laws, well, that undermines our system. If you don't like what the laws are, it's kind of like what I said to Theron earlier, run for the legislature. That's how we change laws. You don't like state law, run for the General Assembly. You don't like the federal laws, you run for Congress. But when it's your job to uphold the law, to just say, I am not going to enforce certain laws, I think it's dangerous. I think it's going to lead to an increase in crime. And the problem is that crime is not just going to stay in the city or the county where that elected official chooses to not do its job. And there are, look, there may be laws in play, particularly under violation of oath of office, if you're not doing that. But be that as it may, crime's not going to just stay in that community. Criminals don't stop at the city or the county line. It's a regional issue. And that's why it's important that we have prosecutors that are doing their job. And if they don't like the law, I encourage them to run for the legislature instead.
Attorney General Chris Carr, what a pleasure. Great to have you. How did your appearance happen? Did Brian just walk across the hall and tap you on the shoulder and ask you to come sit down and talk to us? Is that how we got you today?
It was magic.
It was magic. Well, thank you so much. We know you are busy, and we thank you so much for taking the time to spend some time with us today. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, public affairs and government consultant, and most recently a senior advisor to the Biden Georgia campaign. Christopher Alston is our producer, and Lil Brilliant is our engineer. Thank you all for taking part in being here today. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys. And how about them dogs?
Thank you. And the Falcons, we got to get it together.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.